Blog Talk Radio.
Chatting with Sherry. Today we're going to chat with author Hen Sala, and it's going to be about her new book, Dig Two Graves. Hi, Hen. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
I'm really excited to have you. Your book looks fascinating. Why don't you tell a little bit, though, about yourself? How did you become a writer? Were you always a writer?
So for me, writing was always kind of my passion. My mom would tell me that I'd been coming up with stories since I was 4 or 5 years old. So it was kind of my domain since I was a kid. And then I went to college and I became a journalism major, and that didn't exactly pan out the way that I wanted, but it was always my passion. It was always something that I was doing, no matter what I was doing in my academic or professional career. I was always writing.
So how did you go from journalism to, were you a creative writer too, or poetry? I mean, where did the creativity, because I know there's some creativity in journalism, but, you know, journalism is supposed to be facts, and it's very specific on style and all that information, and creativity as a writer is a totally different thing. I mean, Charles Dickens was a journalist, and Margaret Mitchell was a journalist, so there's a lot of, but I'm always curious on how that change came about.
So here's the thing about writing, is that you can't quit your day job. So journalism was hopefully the way that I would be able to pay the bills so that I can creative write. And at least there was some form of writing in it. So it was more like that was a vocation to kind of support myself until hopefully I became a writer.
That makes sense.
Professionally.
That didn't even pan out
in the end. I'm a mental health counselor now.
Well, and that's something that's interesting because careers are so fluid. I mean, I was... when I was young, I worked in sales, like retail stores and bookstores and all different kinds of things. Then I worked as a travel agent because I couldn't find a job, and my dad happened to work in an insurance agency that was right next to a travel agency, and they needed a receptionist. That's how I got into travel. I mean, it's not like I didn't go to travel school or anything. It just I ended up becoming a travel agent through that little thing saying hi and interviewed. And I mean, he said that they were looking for receptionists. I didn't just get a job on his recommendation. I interviewed and everything, but still, I mean, that changed my life, becoming a travel agent. It's weird the path your career goes. When you became a mental health counselor, how did that come about? I mean, did you go to school for that?
Oh, it's funny. So it's funny that you say that careers are fluid, and I am living proof of that because I went to medical school, and I dropped out, and I went back to Temple and got my BA in journalism. And then that didn't really work out, so I went to NYU and I got my master's in applied psychology. So
whoa.
My path has been very interesting, to say the least.
Oh, that's even funnier because my degree is in lit from when I was in junior college. And when I went to university, I wanted to be an archaeologist, but I didn't know that you had to have a doctorate in order to be an archaeologist, and I didn't have the money.
It's crazy. I mean, you can say what you want about the American education system. There's a lot that needs to be worked on, but we do have a lot of opportunities in this country.
Yeah.
We're given chances to change all over the place. You can change your major, you can change your job. It's our education system is open. So at the very least, if you don't like something, you can change your mind very easily.
That's true. And the other thing is that you can work doing what you're doing as your work, but that doesn't mean that you can have a different vocation than your work and nobody's going to slap you.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's not, there's no real difficulty in it. Yeah, it's expensive and it's hard, and I'm not disregarding that, but at the same time, there aren't a lot of places in the world that will allow you to change your major like 9 or 10 times in college and not get kicked out of school.
I had friends when I was in school who were what we called career students. I mean, I don't know, they probably are still in school. They had money. They loved school, and all they did seem to do was just change their majors, and they never.
And it's interesting. I mean, back when I was in college, I used to complain about it because of gen eds, core classes that we all have to take outside of our majors. So I used to complain about it and say, well,
yeah,
how come I have to take this? But then those gen eds can just change your life. You can take a class that you didn't really want to take, and then you take it, and then it kind of changes your whole perception on what your future is going to be.
It also makes you realize stuff. Like, when I was in high school, I was a C student. When I was in college, I became an A student, which tells you something about the teachers in my high school. But when I started going to college and I was taking general education, one of the things I discovered was I was smarter than I thought I was.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought I was a C student. I thought I was pretty dumb. Or average. Whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Average. But to me, I was like, why can't I get... I mean, I had maybe one or two classes that were B's or A's, but they were stuff I really loved, like drama, writing, creative writing, stuff like that. But until I went to college, I didn't realize that teachers could really inspire you and if you said something, they're like, instead of trying to slap you down and shut you up because you're getting in the way of their academic process, they're like, oh, yeah, that's really good because this is the way it goes. And it was like,
yeah.
Oh, my God, he likes what I said.
It's very interesting. And with colleges, you have every kind of professor. I mean, in high schools, even accidentally, you have the high schools have a tendency to have a uniform staff. They're all mostly, for the most part, on the same page or very similar to each other. But then you go to college, and every professor is different than the next one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. What I was thinking of was astronomy. My astronomy teacher, my philosophy teacher. I would never have taken astronomy or philosophy when I was, even as a extra credit, because I didn't think I had the brains. But when you're in college, you have this big thing and you have to pick things in certain sciences and stuff in your general education. And I was like, well, I have a crush on Neil Armstrong. Why not? I'll do astronomy. That was why I made my choice. But I learned so much and I realized I was smart. Much more than my crush. Not the best academic reason to take a course, but that's...
Hey, it worked out in the end.
Hey, I was 18. What did I know? what kind of... I know you write horror and you love horror, but what kind of books do you enjoy reading? Do you read all different kind of books, or is it just horror books, or... what's your favorite genre? Do you hop? I have a lot of readers and writers that listen to this, and they're very curious about that.
So for me personally, I do enjoy horror very much, and it's one of my favorite things to read. However, I mean, I read a lot of different genres, and my writing is more social commentary, that's what I like to write. And a lot of it ends up being in the part of the horror genre. But, I mean, the book that I'm working on right now isn't part of the horror genre. It's just social commentary on rape culture. So, except in a fictional world. So, for me, it's more what's going on in society, how can we talk about something that people don't like to talk about and make it interesting and people would want to read it because it's a story. It's different when it's fiction.
That's true. That is really true. Do you have a favorite, any favorites in your authors? Do you just like hop from different types of author?
So, like I said, my main love is, it really is horror. My favorite writer is Agatha Christie. She had a lot of influence on me. A lot. And my first adult book, I was like 8 or 9 years old. My first adult book was And Then There Were None by Agatha Christie.
Mm-hmm.
So
classic.
Her own, yeah, classic. I loved it. And she was just a huge influence on me. And then later, also Stephen King, because he's the king of horror.
True.
I mean, so it's my interests are primarily in horror, but it's not just that. I like literary fiction. I like reading weird stories, things that I've never heard before or read before. The one genre I'm not really about is the romance genre. It's not my thing.
Okay. You don't have to like every kind of genre.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, other than a very few select authors, you name one is Stephen King. I'm not really a big horror fan. But I will read, like, I have friends who write horror, and I would say, is it really bad? I mean, I would ask them right up front, you know me, I'm very tender.
Will it traumatize me?
Yes. And they would either say, no, this one's not for you, but this one you can deal with. And then so I will read it. In fact, the next play for Sherry's Playhouse is a horror, but I asked the person who wrote the original story, I said, her name is Lee Murray, she's been a guest and she's a really supportive person. I said, is this something I can read? And she goes, Sherry, it's like the first story you read. Oh, okay, send it on. So it depends. I mean, and that goes for most genres that I say I'm not really into. Like, I'm not a war fan. War books, mm-hmm. War movies, things like that.
Me either.
But there's
exceptions.
Yeah, it doesn't interest me.
Yeah, there's always exceptions.
But, exactly. Lately I've been very interested in World War One because mystery series are set in the 20s, and the reason the people are the way they are was the effects of World War One on them, and so I've become much more interested in World War One, especially where Australia and England, that side of it, than the American, which I knew more about. But it's weird because it started with a series of murder mysteries I'm really into. Have you ever done that? Have you ever like hopped, even though you didn't think you were interested, you would like, oh, this is interesting.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. I'm not really about the also history, but also the medieval genre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's this book that I was reading, and it was called Lady Knight, and it was part of a whole series about a girl who goes into the king's army to become a knight, and it's really, really good. Any other circumstance, I would not read a book like that because it's not something that interests me, but it was good. It was a good exception.
Yeah, it's always
interesting to find
those.
Yeah, and I'm a firm believer that good writing can turn a not so great story into an incredible story.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And it's weird because you could say for years that you don't like this genre, you don't want to read anything of this genre, and then all of a sudden something will pop up and you're like, oh, this is interesting. But it has to be something that leads you to that path. You can't, you don't just dive into something you don't like and start reading because, you know, because I've had people try to force me into doing something, and that's the worst way in the world.
It doesn't work.
Not at all. Yeah. It's just like, did you ever get that effect when you were in high school that the mandatory books that you had to read?
Oh, yeah.
That afterwards you cannot, not only can't read the book again, you can't even watch a movie based on that book because of the effect of being forced to.
Fall Apart. That book, Things Fall Apart was, I mean, I could not stand the book. They made us read it twice in high school. Well, actually, once I had to read it in 8th grade, and then I had to read it again in 9th grade. And I absolutely could not handle hearing about that book again. It's done. I was absolutely done.
I know. I can't remember the name of it, Eva. I think I blacked it out. It's about the Civil War. The movie had Richard Thomas as the lead character. I think I blocked out the name of it, but I love him, and I mean, I grew up watching The Waltons, but I cannot watch that movie. I can't. There's just no way. I saw the movie, and Richard Thomas was being interviewed. This was back in the 80s, and I was like, oh, cool, he's got a new movie. Oh, God, it's that.
I hear you. It's rough.
Yeah, I know. And it's just, or have you ever read a book and you got to this point and you didn't like something in it and you couldn't go further even though you like the author?
Yes, absolutely.
Isn't that the weirdest thing? And it could be anything. It could be something that triggers something in you, or it could just be something you don't like. Like, I was reading a book, and it had a form of child abuse in it, and I love the author, and I knew it was going to come out, you know, that the bad guys would get caught and all that, but I just couldn't read it. I even though I love the author, and I knew it was going to come out all right, I stopped. Have you ever had that happen, even though you love the author?
Yeah, there was with Stephen King. No, actually, a better example is I am a ginormous Harry Potter fan. I love Harry Potter.
Me too.
Mainly because me and my brother, we grew up reading it. We would wait in the lines when the new book would come out. It was very big in our childhood. But when she came out with The Casual Vacancy, I couldn't do it. I couldn't. It was.
Me too.
It's just, I couldn't. It was too much. It was way too much.
I had just lost my father too.
Oh.
And also my fiance died the exact same way as the victim in the beginning of the book. I mean, she described in the way she does and so beautifully, but she described in detail exactly what happened to him. And I closed the book and I gave it to my brother, and I said, I can't read it. I can't.
My issue also with it was that she was trying, it was very clear that she was trying really, really hard to step out of being a children author. And I think it backfired.
Yeah, that's true. But I think also if we had read it not knowing it was her, because
it
that's
might have
how
been
it was. Yeah.
I don't know. It was just, it was so difficult to read. I couldn't do it. Even though I love her.
I love her.
Yeah. But I couldn't do it. And it's so interesting because, I mean, every author can be talented, but that doesn't mean everything they write is going to be gold.
Well, that's just, yeah. I mean, one of my favorite books my father gave me when I was a kid was the books from Thorne Smith, all the different, Topper and Night Life of the Gods and a bunch of other stories he wrote. I get obsessed, I guess you could say. I have to read everything an author writes. If I love an author, I have to read everything they've written. And I got this book that's called The Treasury of Thorne Smith, and it had Topper, and it had the switch one. I forgot the name of it, where they the husband and wife switch their souls. It's a really good book. Anyway, it had all these really good, and there was this, the last book he ever wrote. It was something, The Rain, Doorway of Rain or something. I couldn't read it. It was gibberish. I couldn't believe the man who wrote these other beautiful books, wrote funny, hilarious, incredibly wicked, silly, fun books, wrote this piece of gibberish. And my dad was still with us at the time, and I brought the book to him, and I said, maybe it's me. Could you read this book? It's the last one, and tell me if it makes any sense to you. Maybe I just don't have the mind for it. I was in my early 20s. And he looked at it, and he said, sure. And he read it, and he called me, and he said, honey, you're right. It's gibberish.
And I think it also applies to sequels. I mean, I don't know if you've read it, but The Pig Man by Paul Zinder.
No, I haven't read it.
So I loved it. I absolutely loved that book. But then the same author came out with Pigman 2, and it was just unreadable. So I think a big part of it is sequels are really difficult to write because there's an expectation that you have to live up to.
Yeah, that's true. But I have to be fair to Thorne Smith. I think that by that time, the heroin and all the drugs he was taking took effect of his brain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but
probably.
The point is, you know that this man's brain is not working as well as it did in all his other super amazing books. Why do they publish it?
I think you reach a certain status where the publisher just prints everything.
It's a shame. It didn't tarnish my love of his books, but it's a shame that such a book got out there. And I'm sure that sequel, maybe he was pushed, or maybe it was a bad time in his life that he...
It could be.
I can't remember which book. I think it was The Blue Train. Agatha Christie wrote it in a few days because it was due, but she was in a really bad way when she wrote it. She hates that, even though I actually really like that book. But she hated that book because her mom died, and her husband was leaving her, and it was right after the disappearance, and all those horrible things were happening to her, and they were pushing her to write a book.
Yeah, I mean, The Pig Man, too. The Pigman's legacy was written 20 years after the original was written. Or at least
it
was published 20 years later.
Maybe he was pushed
into
doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people are very insensitive to authors. They just like, they sometimes think that they're like, I don't know, like they're working in a factory.
Get it done right now.
Get it here, crank it out. What's wrong with you? Just crank it out. It's just strange. We're coming to the end, and I want to give you plenty of time. Can you tell us a little bit about Dig Two Graves and what it's about, and also who do you think would be the best audience for it?
So the best audience for it, I think, are people who like psychological thrillers and horror books. So the story itself is about a woman named Jezebel, and she's a psychologist for the court. She does reports and she does testing to prove whether somebody has a mental illness, for a mental illness, please. And so that's kind of like a front for her original business and how she's originally making money, which she runs a human trafficking empire. Yeah, and another spin on it is that she was taken into that, like she was stolen, she was in human trafficking herself, and then she rose and became one of the ringleaders of human trafficking in New York. What's interesting about it is throughout the book, she's having flashbacks and extreme guilt trips, and she feels horrible because she's doing something horrible, but the way that she kind of justifies it to herself is, well, I only take people who deserve to be punished and aren't punished. So, which is why she works for the court, where she'll get a file and somebody is a horrible, horrible person and wasn't punished for anything that they did. And she would take that person. And then in that way, or in her mind, in that way, she would be absolving people who are innocent. So she would take quote unquote evil in the place of the innocent, which is how she justifies it. It's not a justification, but that's how she does. And then she is about to be, she's being framed for a kidnapping of a young woman who she didn't take, and she's being framed, and there's a detective who has a target on her back and is trying to expose her. So throughout the book, she's kind of trying to figure out who's trying to frame her and trying to get the person off her back and get absolved. And it's a very twisty tale that has a lot of, and I don't want to give too much away, but it has a lot of plot twists. Yeah. Unexpected plot points.
Yeah, sounds really good. Is it available now? Where can people get it?
So you can, it's available for Prime on Amazon, and it's also, it can also be ordered from the Barnes & Noble website.
And do you have a website where people can get in touch with you?
Yeah, I do. So I'm on Twitter as Hind H. Salah. Facebook, same thing, and then I have a personal website. And the website is insert professional website title here.com.
Oh, interesting. Insert professional.
So, yeah, insert professional website title here.com.
Okay.
And the story behind that is back when I was a journalism major in my multimedia storytelling class, we had to create our own website, and I thought I would be funny, and, you know, so it was supposed to be like a portfolio-ish website, so I thought I was hilarious, and I made mine insert professional website title here.com. I got an A, and then I kind of just started using it as my personal website.
That is funny. okay, so are you on Instagram?
I am. It's the same handle for all my social media. It's okay. First name, middle initial is H, and then last name.
Okay. And do you have any events, conventions, signings, online events? Anything you'd like to let people know about?
So I am doing another couple interviews in Chicago and hopefully a couple in Denver that I'll be posting on in my social media and on my website that people can access and check out.
Okay. All right. We're at the end of the interview. I want to thank you for coming on. I hope you enjoyed it.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was great. It was really nice talking to you.
Thank you. It was nice talking to you, too. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Okay.